Those Space People, a podcast series of casual cosmic conversations with people working on exciting space projects. Today we have Alice Karuth with us. She is a podcast producer at T-Minus Space Daily Podcast. And Alice has a background in broadcasting and media, and she's currently based in New Mexico, United States. Welcome to the podcast, Alice.
Thank you so much for having me on.
I'm super excited for this conversation because it's my first time having a guest who's professionally into podcasting, and I'm all ears for all the wisdom that you're going to hopefully share with me.
Oh, I don't think I've got much. I'll do my best though.
Great. So you are a podcast producer. What is the role of a podcast producer, and is it any different in the space industry?
That's a really good question. No, it's not different in the space industry. There's a massive crossover when it comes to marketing, PR, when it comes to space, news, broadcasting. But having an understanding of the technology definitely helps, as I'm sure you're very much aware, because it takes taking the very complex technology that is used in space for launch, for satellite data, for every single thing that space touches, and trying to simplify it to a wider audience. So my role is really to take the daily news stories, and I source them from all the many different areas of where we get space news, so either from other news companies, from press releases, from directly from companies, sourcing them from social media sometimes, because that's a primary source of a lot of our space companies that work over here in the US, and then simplifying it. So the way I've explained it to a lot of people is we're like an RSS feed of your daily headlines, and we try and break it down in a way that makes it digestible for everybody to be able to obtain. So within 20 minutes, we give you the daily headlines and a quick chat with somebody from the space industry that might be of interest to you. And the space industry is huge, as I'm sure you're very aware. So we cover such a breadth of different things, everything from space tourism to satellites to observation is really growing. We also talk about infrastructure and machining and all of the components that go into making a rocket, so that we cover everything. So when we talk about people that are our audience, it covers all of the people that work in every single part, and sometimes in parallel as well. And we really try to help them understand what's going on every single day, to keep an eye on the industry and keep up to date with the latest information. So my job is just to source all that information, try and break it down into a way that people understand. And then on top of that, set up interviews with people that I think are interesting, who work in the space industry, a lot like you do every single time you do your podcast.
And you also have a background in event management and public relations and media. You've worked quite a bit in a lot of these different areas. Is there any difference in how all these are done in the space industry versus other industries?
Yeah, I've ping-ponged around a bit in my career. So I started off in broadcast journalism. I worked at ITV in London, and then I went over to Al Jazeera in the Middle East. And I ended up pinging over here to the US 10 years ago, not having any experience in space, but I ended up in New Mexico, which is the birthplace of the US space program. So about 6-7 years ago, I was working at a local radio station, helping out and doing some producing there. And I got to interview a guy who worked at Virgin Galactic. And one of my questions to them was, why New Mexico? Why have you come here? I don't understand why you've picked this random in the middle of nowhere location. And he started telling me about the space history here. This is the first place that the US did any of their missile and rocketry testing. In fact, Robert Goddard came down here in the 1930s and was doing rocketry down here back then. They've actually launched more suborbital vehicles in this area than anywhere else in the US territory, but nobody was talking about it. And I got the buzz straight away. Space is something I've always been interested in, but not necessarily anything I became too aware of. But being a journalist, I immersed myself, I did my research, and I started to learn more about it and just got the buzz. I think it's really interesting. And so we started with the Las Cruces Space Festival. So we were in this tiny little area in the borderland in New Mexico, and started to explain to them about this history, because I wanted people around here to understand the background to it all. And yeah, we do it. We try and break it down and make it accessible to everybody, because space is for everybody. And yet there are so many people out there that don't understand it and therefore find themselves pushing themselves away. So it's about trying to, like I do in my daily role now as a producer, taking that information and making it digestible and accessible to a way of people that don't necessarily have a space background. And a lot of what people were saying to me was like, we don't understand why we spend so much money on space. What's the benefit to everybody here on Earth? So it's flipping the narrative narrative of how do we explain space to everyone? People here didn't understand that you use satellites every single day without even realizing. It's on your cell phone. I said, your weather data that you're getting every single day is from a satellite. And as soon as you start to explain it to them in a way that they can understand, they go, oh, now I get it. Now we understand why space is important to us. And they then talking about all the breakthroughs of what it does here on Earth. Even things like your running machine came from NASA because they needed to have it for exercising astronauts in microgravity. And all of a sudden, it was like a click of, okay, there is benefits to me on a daily basis. So yeah, events were a fun little way of doing it. But again, it's taking that information, bringing it down to a level that is more accessible to everybody else. And then I fell into working for a startup who was doing communications in space. It was a pure luck opportunity. They needed somebody who understood social media and press releases. And then I got my break at Spaceport America, working as their public information officer. And it was while I was there that I went back into broadcasting. I started to look at podcasting as a way of explaining a lot of what happens, why it happens at a spaceport, so people could understand it. And N2K reached out and said, we're doing a space podcast. Would you be interested in applying for this position? So I applied for the producer role. So I've been very lucky that it's all fallen in my lap a little bit, that space just happened on me rather than me searching it out, which a lot of people have these great stories about how they dreamt of being an astronaut. I didn't. I wanted to be a newsroom producer and I am that, but I'm just specializing in an area that I find utterly fascinating and I think is really interesting to a lot of the public. So I feel like it's a privileged position that I get to understand a lot of the technology and break it down to make it more accessible to a wider audience.
And speaking of podcast production, I'm sure you use a lot of AI tools. What kind of tools do you use and how much of AI tools do you actually use in your day-to-day?
So I do use it daily. My boss is very into trying to get our social media written by our marketing intern, which I'm sure my marketing department will absolutely hate. But that's the only time I use it. I use ChatGPT to be able to take my script and write me a summary every single day of what I've just written in that script. I still try and write everything myself. I'm very particular about that. Sometimes it can be, some press releases are pretty self-written and I'm always attributing back to where our sourcing are. So I'm not trying to pretend that I'm a writing genius, but I do think when it comes to your spoken word, it should be human. And podcasting is such a one-on-one conversation. If I start trying to repeat an AI, I might as well just have the AI read it for you. And I don't want to do that. I want to create an area where people are bought in and feel like they're having a chat with me or with our host, Maria, and that we can talk to them about it in a human way. Because if we start to take humans out of that equation, you lose the connection, which is what broadcasting really is all about. I tend to veer away a little bit from using AI when it comes to writing scripting, but my colleagues at the CyberWire have been experimenting with it and then changing it up and making it a little bit more humanized after the fact. And I've veered away from that a little bit more. I have time. That's my job full time, to be able to write scripting every day. So I'm in a very privileged position to be able to spend time to do that and try and make it more digestible for people that are listening at home.
What's your opinion on AI tools eventually evolving into being powerful enough for complete content creation and perhaps even taking over the entire podcast production from concept to delivery without any human intervention at all? Because I'm especially curious if this would work for the space industry, because it's still evolving compared to the more mature industries.
There are some huge benefits when it comes to AI. We've been doing some work with the Amazon Web Services that use a lot of generative AI in their data solutions. And it's fascinating and incredible what they're able to do. They use this Earth observation tool where they're able to eliminate clouds from Earth observation data collection. So rather than sending back a massive dump of images that somebody has to scroll through and take out every single image that's obscured by clouds, AI is able to already do that for you and it saves on the storage capacity. And that is an incredible benefit to AI. When it comes to delivering narratives and stories, I still think AI has a lot to learn. And so personally, it's going to be a while before I start to look to AI for my news stories. So I digest a lot of media. That's my background. And I tend to go through a lot of newspapers, broadcasting. And the moment I get a story read by an AI voice, or I know that you can hear it in the way that they deliver, that it's an AI written story, I tend to, as an audience, steer away from it. It's not something I like and enjoy. Now, that doesn't mean that eventually it's not going to help. And I certainly can see with a lot of the space industry that don't have a marketing plan, why it's appealing to be able to use AI. But I still think when it comes to delivering a narrative, you need to humanize it. A computer is not going to understand the benefit to a human because it's not a human. And really, when you're delivering what your product is when it comes to space, you've got to understand that human reason why it's interesting, why it's important to them. Even if it is a manufacturing tool or a different bit of material that you've come up with, you still need to explain to people why in a way that they will understand. And AI is just not there yet. So I can see the benefit to it. I can certainly see people using it for social media posting and things like that. But I still think you need to have that human involvement because it's not there. And I don't think it's going to be there for a while until you really start getting that narrative directed in the way that you want it to come across.
Yeah, I guess we will soon start seeing a lot of filters for AI, against AI, as in AI filters, like we have spam filters on our for our boxes. We're going to have AI filters on our news feeds.
I think that's a good thing. I don't want to be able to see things. I want people to write things. It's like trying to eliminate an entire industry. Journalism was all about democracy. It's about somebody telling the story and being the person to be your person. That's how I grew up with media when I was growing up in the UK. Is we had the BBC. The BBC had correspondents on the front line in war zones that are able to tell us exactly what's going on. I think in the last 10 to 15 years since social media, we've veered away a lot from that and people have started to get a lot of distrust when it comes to traditional media. But then there are these companies like ours, which N2K stands for News to Knowledge, that really go back to the pillars of what journalism is about. We're not trying to trick anybody. We're not trying to make people get caught out or anything. We're not going to be paparazzi trying to capture you in your underwear through your window. We're about trying to tell a story that's going to give people information and trying to let them make the opinion. That's what drew me to Al Jazeera when I went over and worked there in the Middle East for 6 years for Al Jazeera English. Their slogan is every story, every angle. And one of the first days there when I was training, they were like talking about terrorists and said, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. And really, it's not up to you as the writer to decide which side that is. You let the audience do it. You give them the information and you trust that they will figure out which side they want to stick with. And I think that's what journalism should always be about. And I hope that's what we're always going to veer back towards.
So circling back a little bit, you, as you've mentioned, you have quite a bit of experience in television and media during your time in London and also in the Middle East. So from your experience, what do you think the space industry can learn from other sectors?
Oh, a ton. I think people don't realize even that it's a business vertical that's the same as everything else. We still need people that work in every area, in administration, in legal, in accountancy. There is a lot of transferable skills that can come across, and it's the same with media. The marketing approach is pretty much the same when it comes to every single business out there. It's just having the people that understand the technology and are able to digest it in a manner that, like I say, humanizes it and makes it accessible to everybody else. So I think there's a crossover with pretty much every industry. The one thing I will say is that space needs to learn how to market. I have met many people out there with incredible ideas that have this Tesla-style approach of, I've got the idea of, and then it's going to make itself be known because it's such an incredible idea and such an incredible product. When really we need to be looking at the Edison model of, he might not have had the best idea out there with the light bulb, but he really marketed it really well. And therefore, everybody knows that he was the creator of the light bulb. And I do think that you need to have that. You need to have somebody in-house that understands what you're doing. There are also some incredible PR companies out there that specialize in space marketing, in science communication. So that you need to really figure out who the right fit is for your company, but you also need to really figure out that it is important, because you could have the best product out there and if you're not selling it the right way, you're not going to get the people to buy it, and then you're not going to make any money, and then eventually you're going to go by the side. And I think that's an important approach, is to really think about what it is you're trying to do and how you're going to do it, and you need to have somebody with the marketing skills to do that. And I think it's an easy crossover that you can get people from other industries that know how to digest that information and be able to distribute it in the right manner for you.
So N2K or the T-Minus Space Daily is one of several space podcasts. There are a decent number of podcasts in the space sector covering different themes. So what fresh perspectives do you think can beginner podcasts bring to the table? Or do you think it's already saturated?
You know what? I think there's plenty of space for competition. There's a lot of people that work in this industry, and there are a lot of verticals, and there are a lot of adjacent areas that cross over. I would say anybody thinking about doing a podcast themselves, A, look at your market, find out whether or not there's already a podcast that exists, and then you've got to come up with that fresh angle for it. But also, if you want to do it as an in-house thing, it's a really easy thing to do. But is it worth you spending the time and the money to really do it properly? Probably not. So there are companies like N2K and others out there, a lot of others, that are doing this full time that can help and be adjacent. So N2K also produces podcasts for other companies. We think it's quite important to be able to support people that want to get the messaging across. So there are opportunities out there to look into that. As I mentioned before, when I was at the spaceport, I started my own podcast. I did it on Zoom by myself. The audio quality is terrible. I learned that lesson that actually, if you're an audio-only podcast, you really need to invest in when it comes to your technology, what you're using, how you're recording, how you're editing. I still got the messaging out there and I still got an audience. So there is an opportunity for that. So if you really have a message where you want to give context and you want to do it in-house, there is definitely an opportunity for that. But then there's also an opportunity to pitch to other podcasts. We have a really large audience at N2K. There is no reason why you have to start from scratch and do it yourself when there is already a ready-made audience out there that you can get to. So there are a lot of opportunities to reach out to B2Bs, and there's some really great podcasts out there, and they're all doing something slightly different. What we're doing is very news-focused, very daily, very digestible. And then there are podcasts like yours that are talking to people at length, that are diving into the backgrounds of what people are coming from so that people can relate to the person you're chatting to. So I think there is a big market out there. I think over 500 million people listen to podcasts daily around the world. There is opportunity. I don't feel like competition is a bad thing. It's like everything with space. It will spur us all on when it comes to competition. So I say the more the merrier. Just figure out what your niche is and really carve out your area within that niche and exploit the opportunity.
That's very interesting. And it's a very new take to join someone who's already professionally doing it rather than starting a podcast during your free time like I do. We all started with Zoom recording on Zoom. I also used to do that because my podcast is also a pandemic baby. I started it during the pandemic.
Mine too.
Yeah, of course, now, of course, like you say, I've moved on to more professional tools that will save me more time. But of course, at the end of the day, it's something that I do on the side. And this is a very interesting input to anyone listening who wants to start a podcast on their own, because a lot of my friends from the network really want to embark on this journey, but then a lot of them maybe publish 3 or 4 episodes and then realize it's just too much of time for seemingly no return. But yeah, this is very helpful. Thanks for that. So to make a career out of podcasting, like you said, to join a network like N2K or by oneself to make a professional career out of podcasting in the space sector, what kind of skills do you think are needed?
You need to get the audience. That's the big key kicker when it comes to making money off of a podcast. There's some great platforms out there, but you need to really get about 5,000 listeners per episode to really make money when it comes to advertising. Or you need to get underwriters. To make a career out of it is actually really tough. That's why when I started and I was doing it, it was part of my job in PR and marketing to do outreach. And to me, it was just a tool to be able to figure out another method to reach people in a relatively cheap way, which is why I did it just on Zoom. And then I was able to share on social media. And it worked. And it is an effective tool that manner. But there was no way on earth I was going to get the audience to be able to reach enough to be able to make money from it. What N2K does is we're a multi-factor company. We have a media section that's about sharing the news. And then we have a learning section that focuses on training for cybersecurity. And so we are able to do in-house training, which is paid for by companies like Costco to come in and train the staff on cybersecurity. And then we have a whole testing area. People have to have qualifications in certain areas of cybersecurity. So you can go and purchase a test practice test from the company as well. So that's really our bread and butter, is we make the money through that area. And then we're able to promote that training through our media section with the Cyberwire and N2K's space in T-. It's a really difficult one to actually make money from a podcast. There are very few. The Joe Rogans of the world out there are rare. He just signed a $250 million deal with Spotify to continue his podcast. And he does an incredible job. He does a really great job of chatting. And actually, he's a long form podcast, which is also quite a rare area as well, but talks to people from every single background and every single topic. So he's not got a niche area. You've got to have the personality of Joe Rogan to be able to do that. And unfortunately, not all of us have that personality to really carry it off. So I would say if you're going to approach podcasting, you've got to be honest with yourself about why you're doing it. Is it because you want to promote a product? Is it because you want to help people figure out how to get into the industry? Is it because you want to explain things to people? What is it you're trying to achieve with that? And then you've got to be realistic about whether or not you're going to get the audience numbers to be able to make money from it. I think what you're doing is incredible. And as an engineer, to be able to tell stories is also a really important area. I've met quite a few people that started off their careers as an engineer and ended up in communications because you understand exactly the technology you're talking about all around you. And I think that's a really important skill to be able to understand that and then be able to explain it to everybody. That's a rare thing actually for engineers. And I can say that for a lot of my good friends out there who are just not, they tend to be introverted people. They're not very good at being able to explain what it is they're doing in this really highly complex area to people that don't understand exactly what it is that they do on a day-to-day basis. You're in this wonderful little niche area of being able to do that. So I think that's a really important thing to be able to cover. But it's not for everybody. And I, like I say, there are definitely opportunities out there to pitch to people. It's a bit like the idea of starting your own newsletter or starting your own newspaper. Why would you come up with your own media product in-house if there's already somebody that's doing it out there? You just want to be able to pitch to them. And there are so many, like you say, great space podcasts already out there that are already covering so many different areas. I would start with that first before starting thinking about your own, is to figure out who's already got something out there, how you can pitch to them, how you can get on their podcast and see what the interaction is. And maybe they will let you use that audio for your own promotion. And that way you're not having to put in all the effort. So there are definitely different areas you need to exploit and look into before starting to throw yourself in the deep end, because it is a lot to put on a podcast. It's a lot of background, a lot of editing time, a lot of time promoting it. You've got to think about the benefits and what it is you're really trying to achieve.
That's a lot of very interesting points. Thanks for that, Alice. And since you mentioned sponsors and sponsorships, we all know that most of the space activity in the world is focused in the United States. And that's where most of the space companies are. That's where most of the money in the space industry is, be it from the government or from in private investment. So do you also see most of the listeners or the target audience for potential space podcasts from the US? And is it also focused in the US geographically? Are the sponsors also targeting this kind of audience? Or do you think it's going to be spread out more eventually? How do you see all this?
That's really great questions. At the moment, you're right. The industry is very US focused. However, as you've known in the last 18 months, particularly, we're seeing a rise of commercial space industries across the globe. Yesterday, we reported on China saying that they're going to have a 50% surge in launches this year. And majority of those are from commercial companies. You look at Japan with the rise of their commercial companies, or India has got such an incredible area of commercial companies coming up with Dhruva Space, for example, or Skyroot. There is a huge need for space around the world. At the moment, I would say our audience is predominantly American, about 75% American, but we are seeing a huge growth internationally. And I try and focus internationally because I'm British. I want to talk about the British aerospace industry, but also I've traveled all around the world. I'm very lucky and privileged to have done that. I want to know what's going on in Australia. I want to know what's going on in Malaysia, Singapore, Japan, China, Russia, because space is actually a quite a non-political area. And as much as there's geopolitics going on when it comes to the struggle with warfare in space, we don't tend to focus on that. I let the traditional media companies figure out what's going on when it comes to possible nukes in space with Russia. I'm more focused on the technology and what's happening around the world and what's the true story and not the politics that's going on behind it. So I would say there's a definite growing need for talking about everything else that's going on. We had the space plane company Polaris come on from Germany, for example. Not many people in the US knew about them. And all of a sudden we were like, sorry, there's a whole company over in Germany that's focusing on space planes. And none of us knew that was happening because unfortunately we're so narrow-minded over here in the US when it comes to the space industry. They're not thinking about what's going on. So I try to give a platform to international companies. We've had on spaceports from around the world. I've had space agencies from around the world, different companies coming on, because I do think we need to give a voice to it. I do think people need to recognize this is not a US-centric industry anymore. It's a completely global industry. And I do think at the moment we're at this really fascinating, interesting time, a tipping point of where we're going to start to see this rise of global space. And we're going to see a lot more people putting themselves out there, not just Japan with SLIM finally landing on the moon, making it the fifth country, by the way, to have its own lunar lander. I think we're going to see a lot of this rise of commercial companies around the globe and a lot of things going on with them. So I think trying to look at it, perhaps like with you, you're based in Germany and in mainland Europe. There are opportunities out there to have something that's maybe focused on the European market. And then you can maybe work with the US market and go, we're focused on this and we can come onto your podcast and talk about what's going on over here. So there's definitely an opportunity out there for regional coverage when it comes to space. And I hope people start to really approach it like that. And I hope the industry is starting to see that space is a lot more than just the US and Russia nowadays.
That's a very nice perspective. And I'm also looking forward to an almost sci-fi kind of future, space sci-fi kind of future, where we represent space in out in the universe as globally as from spaceship Earth rather than from different countries. So it's at least that's the vision I have when I work, when I do anything related to space. That's my biggest motivation.
I completely agree with you. As a woman in the industry, and there were still less than 30% represented across the US space industry, I find that as a British woman in the US industry, it's definitely been that as well. So I've lent into it. I've become known as this weird British lady that turns up harping on about space in a lot of these conferences. If that's my little niche and how I'm going to get known and how I'm going to network and get my story across, then I'm going to go with it. And I think everybody else should be doing that as well. I've spoken to some really incredible people that are just as knowledgeable, if not way more so than I am, trust me, a lot more, that are across the globe that are saying, I don't know how to even start. And I'm like, you are probably far more equipped to be able to do this job than I am. So I'm hoping they figure out their way in, and I'm hoping they figure out their little niche and how they're going to put their stories across. And I'm open to being able to support that as well. I think the only way humanity is ever going to progress is by bringing everybody on board. And I'm very passionate about that. And my team is very passionate about that. As an all-female team running a space news podcast, we are all about trying to make sure we get representation in everything that we do. And that includes people from all different backgrounds and all different countries that have very different levels of experience when it comes to space. So yeah, I'm excited to see how humanity moves forwards and progresses, because you're right, we're all on the spaceship Earth together. We've got to make sure that all of humanity is reflected, not just 12 white men walking on the moon from the US.
And speaking of your team, what kind of backgrounds do your colleagues at T-Minus or N2K come from?
Oh, we're a small but mighty team. Majority of them are not from a media background. They tend to come from cybersecurity. My colleague Maria is our presenter. She comes from cybersecurity, PR and marketing. She's done podcasting for the last 5 to 10 years, is an incredible host. So she comes from a slightly different area to space. Space has always been a passion of hers. So she's totally excited to be on board with us and doing it T-minus. Space, I feel like it's that crossover skill. She's come from this IT world and cybersecurity world, but understands how to explain technology. So it's an easy crossover for her to come to that. Jen Iben, our VP, has been with N2K from the start of the CyberWire podcast, which is now 8 years old. She's got some incredible skills that are easy transferable into space. And Brandon Karpf, who's our vice president, he's from, had a naval career not long before starting at N2K. So he's from a cyber background with the Navy. So he's got a kind of high level security background. You don't necessarily have to have a background in space to be able to report on space. You've just got to have an understanding of it. And I think that's the really important part, a passion and understanding. It's like with any kind of job, you've got to love what you do and you've got to be interested in it, because if you're not, then what's the point in doing it? You're going to start to not enjoy that every single day, but you're also not going to tell the right stories with it. So I think that's a really important factor, more so than having the experience. Space is still relatively new as an industry. Until 10, 15 years ago, it was only federal agencies that were working in it. So it was a really small area. Now we're looking at people, like I've mentioned before, not just in the US here with commercial companies, but around the world that are working in space. And in countries that hadn't had access to space before. So you've got to look at it as, it's not so much about having the right background and having the right experience in space, but having the right passions and skills to be able to communicate that in the right manner. So I think I wish space industry would look outside of the space industry when it comes to recruitment, because we've got a workforce problem. And I think we need to start really approaching it in transferable skills from other industries and seeing where we can bring in new people, new ideas to really help build up the workforce for space.
I absolutely agree with every single point you said. And I'm also very passionate about bringing a lot of workforce, a lot of talent from other sectors, because even on the tech side of things, a lot of roles in the space industry do not need knowledge of space, because you can learn a lot of these concepts on the job. And satellites or rockets or everything that we build for space requires so much of reliability. There's always reliance on heritage. And therefore, it's one of the industries, the last one to adapt the most cutting edge of technologies. And then when we have people from the other industries who have worked on the cutting edge technologies in the latest, be it languages or programming languages or other kind of softwares or tools, it's so incredible what they bring to the table. Because I worked with teams that in which there were people who have only been in the space sector, like I have always been in, and with teams that are comprised of people who just entered the space sector from other industries. And the kind of knowledge they bring to the table is incredible. The way they approach a problem is so very different from how a space engineer approaches a problem. So I'm also a huge proponent of having people from other industries come into the space sector and make it more modern.
There you go. You've got a call to action. Come on, join us at the space industry. Every skill is transferable.
Yeah. So also, I'd love to know, because you've worked in different parts of the world, you're currently in the United States now, and you're from London, like you said, and you also worked in the Middle East. What kind of cultural differences have you seen when working in all these three areas? And have you encountered any of these cultural differences in the space industry?
Oh, there are tons of cultural differences across. A lot of people often say to me here in the US, oh, but the UK and the US are very similar. And I'm like, no, completely different, actually. I would say the UK is more in line with mainland Europe than with the US. Even though we share a common language, there are a lot of things that are very different. And I think that's the same when it comes to the industries. In space, you bring your culture with you. It comes to your workforce, how you approach things. I'd say the US is quite a workaholic country, believe it or not. SpaceX is notorious for working their people like 80 hours a week to get the work done, which is great for them, but difficult for coming in and joining them. Whereas I think Europe tends to have a better work-life balance. We're very focused on giving people time with their families. The US doesn't do that. I've got two young kids. When I had my son, there was no such thing as maternity leave like we have in mainland Europe or in the UK. There are definitely huge cultural shifts across the world when it comes to how you approach anything. And I think that's what's important to be able to be reflected in the space industry. Going back to your previous question, when we were talking about whether or not we're getting enough people from around the world involved in space, we need more. And we need to have that culture brought in more. We had that incident with the moon recently where the first commercial lunar payload services, Astrobotic payload, had ashes from human ashes on board. And the Native Americans here in the US were really upset because NASA had made an agreement with them in previous years to talk to them about it before going to the moon. And there was this real weird split, actually, the way people approached it. They're like, why do the Native Americans care? They shouldn't be in the way of progress. But I think what was a big red flag for me is that we should always take into consideration people's beliefs, and we should always take into consideration people's backgrounds when it comes to how we approach anything. Now, I'm not saying that we should be going to debate whether or not we send humans' ashes to the moon, but we should always take into consideration how we work together and explaining why that's important. Because I think if we don't look into everybody's backgrounds and cultures and making sure that we reflect those in the way that we approach exploration outside of our planet, then we're not going to be representative of the human race. And that, I think, is so important. We do need to make sure that we take up everybody's background, everybody's interest, everybody's culture, everybody's language, everybody's approach to things, because that's humanity. Humanity isn't just the US. Humanity is so much more. And I've lived in the UK, being a Christian country, and then very much into a Muslim country living in the Middle East. And now I'm here in the America, where they're a weird hodgepodge mix of everything. I think that's also really important as well. We have a lot of people that have faith that we need to really reflect in things. The same with this, the Native Americans, when they approached this lunar landing with ashes, we need to make sure we reflect that as well. People's beliefs, people's cultures are so important, and we need to really approach that in a right manner and be respect people's beliefs and respect the way that they want to approach things, because it's so important with who we are as people. And I really want to make sure that whatever happens with our future exploration, that we really take all of humanity with us. That was my rambling response.
I'm in complete resonance with a lot of the points that you have raised. And I also believe that space is the global commons, and it's for everyone. And of course, would love to see more and more diversity in terms of culture, in terms of mindsets, in terms of people in the space sector. You've shared a lot of very interesting insights on podcasting, and I love your take on humanity doing space. And thanks a lot again for your time today.
Oh, you're so welcome. I look forward to hearing it back.